What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Jenny Kibbs, manager of Central Sterile at Altru Health System. She began her work in healthcare in 1989 in inpatient nursing. She holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of North Dakota and has a background in project management and lean. As a CS manager, Jenny developed a dedicated scope team and a career growth track for her employees to include paid certification education and technician levels. In May of 2017, Altru's Central Sterile Department moved to a centralized organization-wide endoscope reprocessing program. Altru was the inaugural U.S. facility in June of 2018 to sterilize duodenoscopes using hydrogen peroxide and ozone technology. So Jenny is going to be, I think, for season two, our first I would say frontline technician or manager that we've had on Beyond Clean. And it's always great, Hank, to get some real world experiences from out there in the field and then share best practices and innovative technology with the listeners.
Our mission for the podcast, Justin, is talking to game changers, those folks who are out there innovating, driving change in the industry. Without a doubt, Jenny's story in how she moved her facility from high-level disinfection of endoscopes to sterilizing these scopes. Fantastic story to tell. I hope that it'll be an encouraging story for folks in hospitals today who want to make a change but just don't know where to start. Cannot wait to talk to Jenny today.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Beyond Clean. Joining us now is Jenny Gibbs, manager of the Central Sterile Department at Altru Health System. And Jenny, we've been excited to have you on the show. It's been a hot topic in the industry to talk about sterile scopes, and Hank kind of coined it as the final frontier of endoscope reprocessing. So definitely looking forward to getting into this episode with you, and I wanted to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here. Very excited about the work that we're doing and what this has potentially means for the industry.
Well, let's get right into it and start talking about what prompted the desire for you and the facility to pursue endoscope sterilization.
Sure. Thank you. First and foremost, it's our patients. Our mission here at Altru Health System is to deliver world-class care to our patients of our region, and we really push on leading practices to actually offer the world-class services to our patients. In the reprocessing world, that is to have everything sterile, sterile or disposable. High-level disinfection has been the gold standard for reprocessing of scopes for many years. It has served its place, it served its time, and it still has a place for some things, but it is time to really think about our patients and put them at the center of their care and offer them a clean, safe, sterile device.
Well, that's great, Jenny. You know, Hank and I were joking earlier that, you know, philosophically, high-level disinfection is kind of an odd duck when you think about it, because, you know, it's almost like saying we want to get something really, really clean, but not too clean. And so, yeah, so we're definitely on board with that. And so when you think about sort of, you know, the process of actually implementing this, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of people who have to be involved and a lot of opinions, you know. So what was it, you know, that, and how was it that this actually worked out? You know, how did the stars align to make this happen at your hospital?
It started first with the vision. We, about 4 years ago, got a new surgical and procedural director. She's my immediate one-up, and she had the vision of creating a world-class sterile processing department. It's been an amazing journey for that. Coupled with that, we went under a major renovation. Our department was outdated, and we were looking at new technologies. So we were presented with replacing our chemical low-temp sterilizer, and there was a new one on the market that offered the potential for the long term to reprocess endoscopes. I think it's pretty common in the sterile processing industry. We like to keep our sterilization equipment and our infrastructure for years and years and years. So we wanted to be forward thinking in what was going to take us the farthest into our future. That was step one. Step two was the engagement of the staff and creating that world-class department and world-class services to our patients in our region. We all sat down together. It took an interdisciplinary team. I still remember the day of the new manager 3 years ago, and our infection prevention team called us, endoscopy, microbiology, compliance, and IP all together in a room, and she set the AMI standard, the Association for Medical Instrumentation, ST91, which is the flexible and semi-rigid endoscope reprocessing manual that we follow here, and as our standard, and she said, we have to do this. And so we all as a group decided, what does right look like? And that led to multiple changes we made with reprocessing and cleaning verification and who's doing the work, but it also pushed us to sterilization. We moved any of our scopes that could be sterile to sterilization. We took capital requests forward. We converted our entire ENT line to sterilizable scopes versus high-level disinfection, made major investments in our scope inventory, and the last one that we're proud to say is that we're pushing on now is our GI endoscopes.
Wow, yeah, that's a wonderful story, and I know there's folks sitting out there, you know, listening to this thinking, I've tried this before, or I have talked about trying to push us in this direction. And I know you mentioned that you had a leader who kind of cast the vision for the world-class sterile processing. If you had to say what was the defining factor for this, and it may be hard, I know, to distill it down into one or two things, you know, but what makes your story different? Is it really leadership? Is it that one, you know, golden leader who's saying, I'm not giving up, we're going to get there together? Or is an overall culture of the hospital that's open, you know, to being industry leaders and forward thinkers? You know, what would be the one or two things that would make your story different from others?
I think one of the top ones for sure is our engagement of our senior leadership. They made the investment with their time and energy to our CSD. They are invested in the overall mission of the health system to offer world-class care. We also have our safety goal is zero defect, period. We want to offer zero defect across the entire continuum of our care. With that being said, every single member of our senior leadership team has been in our CSD, in Blues, in our department, stood next to my team. Multiple of them have done their lean projects, lean facilitation training in our department. They understand as much as they can our workload, but they truly drive the value of our department across the organization. So I think that's the first major thing. The second thing is the CSD-specific department stepping up, being professionals, putting themselves out there and being that true advocate for the patient in all the situations. So getting at the table, always putting the patient at the center. What would the patient want? What does right look like for our patients? Right looks like a sterile duodenoscope, period.
So Jenny, you've already mentioned a couple of things, but going back to the equipment, what kinds of capital purchases did you need to make in order to see this through? And then I think you kind of already mentioned it, but was there any sort of resistance that you felt from higher ups when you're talking about, you know, spending, you know, pretty significant amounts of money on things, or were they 100% on board?
For the most part, they were 100% on board. In theory, they were. I think where we had to get into the weeds was we had to show what the cost of noncompliance looks like. So there are soft costs associated with things. There are real costs. What would a sentinel event with a death due to a contaminated duodenoscope cost our organization? What would a lawsuit look like? What would a non-reimbursed hospital stay cost the organization for a surgical site infection received in the hospital? Those are non-reimbursed services, and that opens us up to a lot of risks. What would the other avenue that we look at is Joint Commission compliance. So we are Joint Commission certified and surveyed, and you need to look at what would the cost of non-compliance with the standards we say we follow to not have a buttoned-up, highly reliable process for what we need to do. So taking that, trying to mitigate the risk of the organization, high-level disinfection and procedural and clinical areas is a major risk point. You have multiple people, multiple things that is such a complex process with the temperature monitoring, all the records for this or that, tracing that back to the patient. It's very complex. So we justify the cost by also looking at that risk bucket and what were some of those risk costs. As far as equipment that we made with our remodel, we needed to replace our old 100S, a very reliable long-term chemical sterilizer we had. Just volume and capacity, it was not meeting our standards, and it was time to replace that. My one-up says, you know, it's a benefit and a curse that nobody understands the sterile processing world. So you have to make your case for the equipment you need, and you really do have those leverages to do that. We, at the time of our remodel, eliminated our ethylene oxide. It was very outdated. It was a risk, so we looked at the benefits of removing it and what that the risk associated with our employees also the turnaround times of a 14-hour cycle. It wasn't something that we wanted to keep and invest in long term. So we looked at a potential replacement for our old chemical sterilizer we were replacing, and also something that would take on the workload long-term of that ethylene oxide. And that's where we landed on the Sterizone VP4 sterilizer.
So talking about the VP4, you know, that's something a number of sterile processing leaders, especially if you're going to the conferences or if you're reading the industry magazines, you've probably seen something out there about the VP4, and you know, maybe that it's another one of those low temperature options, but I think there may be some confusion on what all can it do. So you're saying that that was the driving factor maybe on how this fits into this vision for scope sterilization that caused you to choose that type of sterilizer as opposed to another one?
That was one of the reasons. Initially, we really looked at it for two reasons. We needed to replace it anyway, our outdated one. Most of them have 25 to 30 pounds of capacity, single load type, multiple cycles. The Sterizone VP4 has 75 pounds of mixed load capacity. So I can really do triples of volume in that sterilizer versus the other chemical sterilizers that I have. The cycle time is very similar. So from an efficiency and a cost effectiveness, just looking at that aspect in the CSD, it affords me a cost savings in my price per parcel of items sterilized. And I have that data to work on. And so I'm proving that it's gaining me efficiencies that way. The second thing that we looked at is the long-term benefits. At the time we purchased our first one, it did the TSO3 Sterizone VP4 did not have its 510K clearance to do GI endoscopes, but we knew they were working on that. And so we took a mitigated risk that would come long-term, and it did.
So obviously in the industry, you know, one of the big questions out there, I guess background questions maybe, or the elephant in the room anytime someone brings up that we need to be sterilizing endoscopes, which, by the way, I think everyone agrees that that's a better platform and context, you know, for utilizing these things, is to have them sterile rather than high-level disinfection. But there's always someone in the room, and, you know, nowadays there's a lot of folks in the room because we're aware of the issues, you know, but someone raises their hand and says, well, yeah, if the scopes are not clean, it doesn't matter what you're doing, though. If you're high-level disinfecting or if you're putting it in a sterilizer, it's still going to come out dirty if it didn't go in clean. So how did you manage internally that kind of debate between ultimately the breakdown is at that cleaning stage, and if we got that right, and there may not be as many issues with the high-level disinfection of the scopes?
For me, it's a non-debate, and I'll explain why. The cleaning and the cleaning verification, no matter the method you use, in my opinion, needs to happen. We took steps also we've been doing it for 18 months. 18 months ago, we centralized in our organization all of the endoscope reprocessing to the central sterile department. So we partnered with endoscopy, and that was, again, an interdisciplinary decision that was made for the betterment of our entire organization. What it wasn't was saying that high-level disinfection under the endoscopy team previously wasn't meeting standard. They did an amazing job with what they had. They did it to the industry standards at their time. But times are changing. So when we did the centralization, part of that was to give time and energy back to the endoscope teams so they could take care of the patients. Those techs need to support the physicians in the room, the nurses in the rooms. The nurses need to be supporting the patients, doing their pre and post care, not worrying about taking a scope into a room and doing the reprocessing. So that was one benefit. The second benefit is we could change our standards, which we did for our verification of the manual clean. 18 months ago, we went to 100% borescope inspection and ATP testing on every single endoscope that we reprocess in our department. With that, we've had significant drops and changes in our culture rates. We really are making sure that we have a verified clean endoscope. So no matter the method that we use, whether it's high-level disinfection or sterilization, we know that those are going to be effective to the best of their ability.
So, Jenny, let me jump in there real quick. As you're talking about visual inspection, which on the podcast, we are huge fans of all kinds of visual inspection. Just, you know, the old-fashioned look under lighting, and also all the new technologies coming out, like the boroscopes, as you mentioned, you know, microscopes, et cetera, and those kind of cleaning verification tests, such as ATP. But all those come with a cost. So as we're listening to this, you know, with the renovation, with the new equipment, all the cost of that every scope testing. So you were still able, even with all those, to make the business case and convince, you know, some CFO who does not know and understand the true dangers that we're talking about here, but you were able to make that business case. And I mean, I know we asked you before again, you know, but how did you do this? How did you work it, communicate it in a way to advocate for patient safety on the front lines and still get what you needed at the end of the day?
I will say it was really being at the table, making that case, making that when I wrote up my capital request of why we needed to do it, when I brought forward the purchasing request to move, we also went to 100% disposable buttons on every scope that we could. So we made a large investment, but it's not my investment. It's all Truths. It's my organization's investment. And so again, you put that patient at the center, and we really have a unique culture here where the patient is the center. Yes, we need to pay close attention to financials. We're a completely independent health system. So we really need to make sure that we're financially viable for the future, but we have to take care of our patients, and we have to offer them the safest level of care that we can. And our entire organization believes that. It is my duty as the manager of the CSD to speak to that. I need to do what needs to be done. I need to know my business, and I need to run my business, and I need to advocate for the patients that my business affects. I think one of the most impactful ways that we've done that is, again, having every senior leadership member from physicians to our C-suite come through our department. They've stood at the endoscope reprocessing sink. I've had them stand with somebody reprocessing an endoscope, a US linear scope, and tell them, this scope has probably about 100 to 150 manual steps. And that goes into the time that they spend at the sink, you know, so why I invested in a height adjustable sink. So, and I show them the results. So I've showed them the reduction in injuries. I've showed them that we've went from a standard percentage of positive culture rates, whether it's 5 to 8% for long term. When we took over and we did the conversion, in 18 months, we have had one positive scope culture, period, instead of a monthly average of 5 to 8%. But we are making sure that that scope is clean. So that's the investment in the video boroscopes that we have. That is the investment in the ATP testing. I have the data to show them what we are doing with our ATP testing. So on the elevator mechanism, in 18 months worth of data, our ERCP or duodenoscopes, that elevator mechanism has failed 14% of the time. Our EUS linear scope with the elevator mechanism has failed 27% of time. So if I wouldn't have had that ATP testing, you know, that verification of the manual clean, one in four of those EOS scopes would have went into the high-level disinfection for reprocessing and not have been clean. You know, what is the efficacy of that and what are the outcomes of that? So we have that data to show that. So some of it is, we do a lot of lean stuff here. So thinking of the PDSA model, we're not going to do a trial, but we're going to plan, study, do, and act. We're going to plan, this is what we need to do, this is the business case, and write up a sound business case looking at those risk points as well and navigating that with the senior leadership.
And Jenny, we really are just stunned by the involvement, particularly of the upper level executives with your hospital. And they really do deserve to be complimented here in this process, that they really took time to physically be there in your department and see these things and talk to people. You know, that's a luxury, and really this deserve to commend them. And I talked about kind of the data for, you know, how it's improved the scope outcomes. I'm curious, what has this focus and this intensity? I can hear the passion in your voice. What does the impact on the morale in your departments look like after this process?
Our CSD team is proud. This is all about them. They are the ones doing the work. They are the professionals. I am just the person trying to get the items they need and the stuff they don't need out of their way. And that is what I should be doing as a leader. That's my personal philosophy. They are the true heroes here. They are the ones in the sinks. They are the ones at the sterilizers. They are the ones passionate about what we're doing with the video boroscopes and looking at that. It is the impact and pride that they have about, to summarize it up, our culture where we have shifted this. So it truly takes an interdisciplinary team. We had US procedure day. We had multiple back-to-back procedures scheduled. Our first two, there was damage upon, you know, we found stuff inside the scopes when we looked at them after those first three, after the first uses, something had happened during the procedure. We had an interdisciplinary team in the CSD supervisor's office. It was the endoscopy tech. It was our sterile processing endoscope tech. It was the actual GI gastroenterologist physician, the endoscopy supervisor, my supervisor, and me as the manager, and the endoscopy manager. manager, and we all were looking at the video of what was in that scope, and we all agreed together, and it was that we could not guarantee the safety of that scope because of the compromise to the lining, and we couldn't guarantee that we could clean that or get under that flap that was in there. And so the pride in everybody about knowing that we are offering the absolute safest care to our patients, it's just spread like wildfire across the endoscopy teams and the central processing teams, and it's theirs to own. It's their win.
Yeah, so I know, Jenny, you can't hear the audience right now, but they're all saying, wow, this is a story that we want to be told about our hospitals too, because ultimately, and I used to say this when I was a frontline leader, is at the end of the day, you don't know what hospital you're going to end up at. Even if you want to go to your hospital and you want your instruments used on you and your family, if you have a car wreck across town or in another state, who knows where you're going to end up. And the same thing with these endoscopic procedures. So the question that we want to end here with is, what tips and insights would you give to other leaders in facilities who are wanting to make the same change, to go from the questionable process of high-level disinfection to really taking it all the way to that sterilization stage and conquer the final frontier of endoscope reprocessing?
I think there's a couple things that I just, as far as tips for the CSD leaders, allow your team to be empowered and respected and give them an environment of purpose and trust to do the work that they need to do. And that's one thing. Second thing, as a leader, you have to say yes. You have to be at the table. You have to be that patient advocate. We never see the patient in the CSD, but we should be more connected to the patient than anybody else, because every single step of every process, whether it's one step or 150 steps, can affect that patient outcome. And that needs to be translated down to the team, and the team needs to live that mission. As far as senior leadership, don't wait for them to come to you. Go to them. Ask them. Invite them. Be smart with your business. Write up solid business plans. Reach out to the resources you need. I really advocate to an interdisciplinary team. My infection prevention team and the CSD, we are like glue. We are each other's best friends, and we need to work together always. We need to reach out to the resources we need from legal and compliance and risk management to really make those changes happen. It takes everybody in that interdisciplinary team to say, this is what we want to do and why, especially if you butt up against resistance. It's not easy in any healthcare environment, I don't think, to go up and present a case of why you need to purchase 25 new ENT scopes. You have to write those business cases for that. My last piece of advice is to make it real to somebody not in the industry. High-level disinfection, OPA, is it verified to kill HPV? So you look at an ENT scope. Yep, it's not. Is it semi-critical? Is it not? But again, HPV, and where is that transmitted, and what cancers can that cause? And so give them things in a term that they can relate to and make decisions on. That's my couple of lists. I'm sorry.
No, that was beautiful. You're going to get not only a loud amen from us on the show, but I think all the listeners are going to be really impressed with your interview. And I wanted to thank you for coming on and specifically for sharing your insights, because that's really what we had hoped to achieve with this podcast, was to info share how people have been successful. And this has been one that we've asked many other guests, and I know you've added a lot to that ongoing dialogue on the show from what you shared as we wrapped up this interview.
I do have one other thing that I think is very impactful, and I've missed it in my presentation. I want to throw it in here, but the other thing that I have is very impactful is connecting to a patient and putting a face to a name. We adopted mythical patient in our department. So we did a study of what is our average surgical patient, what is our average endoscope patient, and we gave them a face. And we have that face in the center of our huddle boards, at the center of what we do. When somebody is talking about a process, they say, what would Carla and Bill do? What would they want? And so to give them a real tangible face to that, I had the luxury of and the privilege of meeting a lovely lady named Carla Warner, who lost her husband to a CRE infection from a contaminated duodenoscope. And she has had a profound impact on our department and me personally, as far as affecting that change, being that change, and speaking up. And you never know what one person's influence can be. It just takes one spark to go here, to go to the next person, to influence maybe the culture at one organization. And that's truly how we're going to change moving to sterilized processes for our patients.
Yeah, you know, I've seen people do presentations and point to the patient, the pretend patient in the audience, but you really humanize that even more with what you're doing in the department. So kudos to you and really nicely done. And again, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That was Jenny Gibbs, manager of Central Sterile at Altru Health System. And Mike, I thought Jenny really brought a lot of great advice to our frontline technicians out there in the field every single day. I know we've had a few other podcasts where we've really gotten to what does it take to be a good leader, but just the way she talked about sort of humanizing and bringing the patient into the department and how to really get the attention of the C-suite, which is a challenge for anybody working in sterile processing today. Everything that she recommended is just excellent advice, and I almost feel like at some point we need to put together a set of tools where we take some of this advice and give samples and encourage other people to info share so they have templates to work with.
Yeah, Justin, that was a phenomenal interview. I mean, there's so much that can be learned from that particular interview, just talking about putting together interdisciplinary teams of experts to really come together and really do what they say when it comes to doing what's best for the patient, not meeting the minimum, doing what's best and really putting their money where their mouth is on that. And I can tell you, I got to believe that that whole CS department really believes in their mission. They believe that they make a difference and it makes a difference in their everyday lives. And I can tell you this, if I need an endoscopy procedure done, I am going to that hospital.
Oh, yeah, you have to feel really good about that and the way that they're processing them 100%. But really, you know, it's not even if they were doing high-level disinfection, I would still feel the same way because it's just about how they've gotten the resources that they've needed and how they have their processes mapped out and really planned. It's really exceptional. So great job, great guest. Looking forward to the next episode. And Jenny's one of those people I can see us bringing back for a future episode, as we've always talked about. Many of our guests will make repeat performances on Beyond Clean. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes or Stitcher, and now also on Google Play and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.